Gray here with you, but not alone, because I've got Civic Media's own Mike Clemens here with me to talk Wisconsin sports. Good morning, Mike. How's it going today?
Hi, Gray. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. We've got a nice morning that's going to turn into an incredibly hot day, but also heating up. We've got NBA Finals, Brewers in good shape, and some weird Packers stuff going on. How about those NBA Finals, though? A Game 7 for the first time in a decade.
Yeah, Pacers were at home last night. Huge support from the Pacers fans down there, and they got out to an early start. By the third quarter, they're up by 30 points. They beat the Thunder last night 108-91. As a matter of fact, Tyrese Halliburton, the kid from Oshkosh North High School, class of 2018, was able to get out there somehow on that strained right calf muscle he suffered in the last game. And he had 14 points and 5 assists. Played for 23 minutes. They were able to sit him in the fourth quarter and rest him up. So, yeah, they've got themselves now 14 points. You know, the other thing about us, the Pacers had 6 players with double digits. That's the way you do it.
No kidding. Get that spread out. I think they're proving why I don't put money on sports, Mike. It's just a perfectly. Yeah. It's what's going to happen tonight is that's one heck of a question.
Yeah, I mean their highest score is Obi Toppin with 20 points. So that means that they're going to have a game 7. This is the first time they've had a game 7 in 20 years. The last one was 9 years. In 9 years, you're right. It's only the 20th game in NBA Finals history to go to a Game 7, and 4 times the road team won Game 7. So, you know, Indiana's got their work cut out for them. The last Game 7 was in 2016 when LeBron James and the Cavaliers, they were down 3-1, came back to beat Golden State Warriors to win the Larry O'Brien Trophy. So that game is going to be Game 7 is Sunday night in Oklahoma City against the Thunder. Tip-off time, 7 o'clock on ABC.
That's an interesting stat about Game 7, though. The road team taking more than their fair share. That'll be interesting to see shake out this weekend. But Wisconsin sports in general, I'd say, at least for the moment, until the Packers show what they've got this season, we're in good shape because the Brewers are on a much better streak than they opened the season and opening a series tonight against the Twins at Target Field.
Yeah, they had a nice game yesterday against the Cubbies. They beat them 8-7, despite some bad calls from the home plate umpire there in the last couple of innings with Abner Uribe and then Trevor McGill, their closer. I mean, there's clearly some balls. And they were even replaying on the TV where they showed the strike zone, and this guy was calling them balls, and Pat Murphy was just going nuts and yelling expletives from the dugout. Fortunately, wasn't thrown out of the game. But McGill then got them to hit into a double play and retire the side and hold on for the win. His 16th save of the season, 8-7. So tonight, the crew. Oh, by the way, did you see the story about the guy who climbed the net to get a Sal Frelick bat?
I saw a little bit of that. I thought, okay, this might be. We've got two versions of baseball. You've got people who say baseball's too boring for me. They're not catching this stuff. How high did he get?
Like, you know, I mean, look like 30 feet or more in the
Jeez.
Air. Sal Frelick swinging, and then the ball goes flying out of his hands, and it gets stuck way up in that safety net behind home plate, like right around the spot where, you know, there's the on-deck circle. And this kind of handsome guy, and looks like he's in his late 20s, wearing Ray-Bans and a dress shirt and pants. He starts climbing that net like Spider-Man, you know? So he gets up to the side, and he grabs the bat, and he's coming down, and by that time he's greeted by ushers that said, yeah, you'll hand the bat back over to us. Thank you for getting that for us. And at the end of the game, Sal Frelick came out and got pulled a bat and autographed it for this Cubs fan. It said, hey, nice climb, Sal Frelick. And he gave him a souvenir. So
that's too cool.
That's pretty cool. But that story's making national headlines. It's you know, a great video.
I'm thinking you got two critical ingredients to that. First of all, you see it happen, and then you've got, I can get it. And everybody's going to see me. And then, bam, go. And actually, come to think of it, there may have been a critical third ingredient that people can probably guess, given the beverage of choice at most MLB stadiums. But
there may have been alcohol involved, yeah. So it's an. And by the way, you know, we have spent so much time remembering and honoring Bob Uecker as a great baseball announcer, but as funny as he was, you know, I listened to Pat Hughes, who used to be his partner for about 12 years, who's been calling the Cubs games now since, like, 95 or 96. Pat's pretty funny too, man, because he was saying, "Hey, Ron, you know these Brewers, their next game, their starting pitcher will be Jacob Mizrabowski. Did I say Jacob right? What a pretty funny line, but yeah. The Miz, Jacob Mizrabowski, is up tonight on the mound for the Brewers against the veteran Joe Ryan when they take on the Twins a little after 7 o'clock at Target Field tonight in Minneapolis.
Hoping to see a little bit more consistency in calls. I had a chuckle at Pat Murphy's quote when one of the reporters asked if that ump had been erratic, and Murphy said, you didn't say it. I didn't say it. You did. Actually, a really thoughtful quote from him, straight up saying that he doesn't feel that it's worth the time to address the umpire when it comes to balls and strikes, which is, that may be obvious to some fans, but I know there's a lot of fans at home saying, hey, get in his grill. You know, that's what a lot of people are hoping happens. You watch hockey for the fights after all, and baseball, it's got its moments. But like, I was super glad to hear that out of Pat Murphy. Just, I'm not going to waste my time on that. It doesn't go my way when I do. You know, it's I think of the NFL. How many flags have been picked up because a coach has yelled in the face of a ref?
None? Well, you know, and he said that when there was a dust up with Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals and Reese Hoskins the other night when they were playing the Cardinals, because Contreras has moved from catcher to first base for the Cardinals, and he's sort of blocking the bag for one of the rookie base runners for the Brewers. And Hoskins started shouting from the dugout, hey, man, you know, knock it off. You're supposed to give that guy a base path. So they were yelling back and forth at each other. And then Contreras in the visitor's clubhouse was, you know, bad-mouthing Hoskins and the Brewers a little bit. And Murph said, I'm not getting into that. He said, you know, let the players settle that. And if they can't, the umpires will. You know, I'm not out there telling guys to bean players on the next time up and all that stuff. That's all player stuff. I stay out of that as a manager. I thought that was a very clever, politically interesting statement. Like, hey, if this gets out of hand, umpires will take care of it.
Agreed. And not to get too deep into my own opinion, but I will say the more I see a Pat Murphy sharing his philosophy of leadership like that, or those small moments, I like those glimpses. And I know, Mike, you're a busy guy, so I want to steal a little bit more of your time for NFL. New Packers president Ed Policy made some comments this week, and when I first heard them, I thought, yep, that's some boilerplate priorities. And then I thought, wait a minute, those top three priorities, they were win football games, keep the team in Green Bay, and keep it involved with the community. And again, I glanced over that, and then I thought, wait, why do we have to say out loud, keep the team in Green Bay? Isn't that a given?
It was kind of a red flag for a lot of people. I mean, social media sort of blew up. Yeah, I asked him the question. I said, you know, look, Ed, you've been here now 12 years. And somebody told me about 5 years ago, this Ed Policy guy, watch him, okay? He's going to be the next guy. That's Murphy's boy now. Oh, really? Yeah, he's doing all this stuff at Titletown. Because, you know, the only person that talks from that front office is Mark Murphy. That's the way they like it. And I started paying a little bit more attention to that, and sure enough, that's what ended up happening. So when you see all those buildings got built with Titletown, when you see that brand-new football operations facility that they built with the underground parking for the players and employees where Goody and LaFleur, the scouts, all the assistant coaches, all the players are over in now in one building, when you see that they're completely renovating now the Packers locker room after 20 years, and that's going to open up in time for training camp, I got a whole insight on that from the other day and how cool that's going to be. And then the draft, you know, the NFL draft going without a hitch. A lot of that is Ed Policy. You know, Mark's got the vision and is a spokesperson, and Ed's the one who's an attorney, like Mark, who not only can read the player contracts but do all the construction contracts. And Ed Policy's dad was Carmen Policy, who ran the 49ers back in the 80s and early 90s for the DeBartolo family when they were winning Super Bowls. And then later, and these people, you know, the Policies are from Ohio. So they grew up, you know, Paul Brown Browns fans. And when the Browns trucked off to Baltimore to become the Ravens, Ed Policy, like Bud Selig, was the guy that said, we got to get, you know, franchise back in here. So he was the president, the first president of the new Cleveland Browns. And this is what Ed grew up around. You know, this is the background he comes from. He's the commissioner of the AFL. So the Packers let me have about a 15-minute sit-down with him the other day. And I said, so all these things you've done with Titletown, the draft, all this stuff. I said, what's next? And his statement was, we're going to win football games. We're going to make sure the team stays in Green Bay. And we're going to do things to strengthen our community. And then people are like, what do you mean you're leaving Green Bay? You know, you're you know, you've got shareholders and owners and all that. And I think he's saying, look, you know, we're in a league now. If some 35-year-old billionaire comes in and sits at the table, the NFL, and says, or a new commissioner, and says, you know, what's this Green Bay thing? We want to expand to the world. Let's make them the Germany Packers. The G could stand for Germany, and then we could put them in Berlin or Munich or whatever. Why are we in this small little market? I mean, crazier things have happened, like the Lakers going for $10 billion. I think the other thing, though, Gray, is this. Remember that story about 6 months ago where the Packers were kind of going back and forth on the lease with the city of Green Bay?
Yes,
and
I do.
To sort of table it?
I do.
That's what he's talking about. He said, that's the first thing I need to get settled.
Okay.
That lease thing settled. That's the undertow.
Gotcha.
That's what's going on.
So more a signal to those who are subtly tracking things that have been relevant but aren't the scary thing that people are going to think. One thing I think that's really good to remember about this transition, at least if we're judging a book by its cover, which I refuse to do, but let's look at the covers for a second. Mark Murphy, you see him and the first thing he does is he gives you that folksy hometown smile and you immediately like Mark Murphy, almost no matter who you are. And Ed Policy seems like a great guy. I like Ed Policy, but for very different reasons. He's got a certain polish to him. He's got a certain side of presentation to him. Like Mark Murphy, somewhat notorious for not being great at keeping a secret. He had a bit of a smile that would give him away, I'm told. I bet you, and again, I'm not a betting man, but if I had to, I'd bet Ed Policy could have a poker face. So there's some differences there, and I think we'll adjust to that. I don't think...
Or there's this. Hey, Ed, what about, LaFleur and Gutekunst? You know, there's 2 years left in their contract. Yeah, we'll talk about that a year from now. Which means, and now he says, no, I don't really believe in having guys just 1 year left in their contract. That's a lame duck, and I don't think that works. But, we'll talk about that after. So, in other words, this season, yeah, I'm your new boss. Prove it to me.
All right.
I found that interesting, didn't you?
I did. Well, I mean, see, you're making me second guess my assumptions. I'm so used to what we've had here, Mike, and I think a lot of Packers fans have, and I don't think we need to ring the alarm bells of change, but I think we're right to pay closer attention maybe this week than last week, simply because...
I've been saying this for 2 years, man. It's regime change. Don't underestimate that there could be some changes. You know, we'll see, but he's, you know, new guys taking over July 25th.
Mike, I was having a content and relaxed Friday until you graced us with your presence here on 98Q Country. It has been fantastic to have you, but I'm definitely going to be doing more Googling about Ed Policy today. Thank you so much for some of your time today.
Okay, great. Hey, have a good weekend.
You too, Mike. We'll talk to you soon. Oh, goodness. I was feeling just fine about that. Mike, you got me down. But like Mike was saying, we don't think it's going to be the kind of thing where there's an actual question of moving the Packers. It just, there was a leasing question a couple years ago, so it absolutely makes sense for the new incoming team president to mention that sort of thing. That said, was it in all of our consciousnesses? I would say probably not, and now it certainly is. So, as always, I'm a firm proponent of what's called Hanlon's Razor, the simplest explanation is usually true. If you've got a simple explanation against a complicated one, usually the complicated one's the scary one. Doesn't mean the simple one is always good, but let's look at it this way. Money was involved. It's an NFL franchise. There's a lot of profit to be talked about, and so things like where the team is are more relevant than with other places. And like Mike talked about, look at what happened with Baltimore. There used to be a team called the Baltimore Colts. And now we have the Baltimore Ravens and the Indianapolis Colts, and somehow the Browns are involved in that too. Like, weird stuff happens when people own NFL teams and feel some kind of way about that. As always, and as will always be, my NFL motto, we'll see.